We're discussing family law and what informs the custody and placement decisions in cases involving domestic abuse. Is shared custody best if one parent is accused of domestic violence? A question this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. In deciding custody cases, the family court system is guided by what is in the best interest of the child. Domestic violence is one of more than a dozen factors that courts must consider, but some legal experts say that Act 130, that's designed to keep the victim and their child safe by presuming that sole legal custody should be awarded to the victim, it has little impact. Are you in a custody dispute now, or did a court award joint custody? What has that experience been like? 800-642-1234. Chris Hansen is a mother and survivor of domestic abuse living in La Crosse. She co-founded a group called Mothers and Kids Surviving Abuse. Chris, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you.
Good morning. We also have Carmen Petrie with us, president and CEO of Milwaukee-based Sojourner Family Peace Center, providing domestic violence prevention services. Carmen, welcome back.
Good morning.
Good morning, Carmen. Let's start with you. You've been working with domestic abuse survivors for decades. How do the courts handle child custody cases and placement when a parent who is filing for divorce from the abuser?
Well, you know, first thing I want to say, thank you for being here. And Chris, it's an honor to be with you. Anytime I have an opportunity to be with a survivor, I want to acknowledge their courage for speaking out. I am an advocate. I'm not a prosecutor, an attorney, or part of the court system. So my perspective is shaped by my experiences with survivors. I don't know that the family court is equipped to screen or understands enough about the issue. I think we have a lot more work to do to open doors for survivors in the family court system. We've known that for years, and we've been working to try to open doors. For me, it's the beginning of creating, you know, you need to create safe spaces where survivors can come forward. So the family court system, you know, operates and is dedicated towards trying to determine, as you said at the beginning of the show, what's in the best interest of the child. But the difficulty for us is most of the domestic violence that we witness or hear about goes unreported. There is sometimes not evidence that the court can consider. And sometimes when there is evidence, they dismiss it.
When you say that the system is not equipped, what do you mean by that?
What I mean is, for years, you know, we've opened doors in the criminal system and embedded and have partnerships between advocacy organizations and many of the partners in the criminal system, which means that there's opportunities, there's partnerships, advocates are embedded. We don't see the same kind of structure in the family court system or process. You know, we don't have a lot of partnerships throughout the state where advocates are embedded. You know, we need more in-depth screening tools. We need better educated partners in the family court system, judges, guardian ad litems, attorneys. You know, they need to be better educated about the issue and understand the complexity. So that's what I mean by not equipped. I think we have to look at the structure and ask some questions about what we've built or what needs to be built to ensure the safety of children and survivors who are navigating the system.
Survivors navigating the system. Chris, you are in that camp. You know, after being in a relationship for a decade, you filed for divorce and later tried to get custody of your daughter. Would you be willing to share your story, your experience?
Sure. I was married to a man who was abusive, but never left bruises. So there's no, you know, how do you report and file, you know, how do you file police reports so there could possibly be evidence of a, when there's just a fight and it's constant belittling and constant denigrating of you as a human, right? There's nothing that protects somebody against that in an intimate relationship. It's impossible to prove. It's he said, she said. He held more power than I did. You know, navigating the court system was doubly traumatic. I had filed a temporary restraining order and was granted that. When I filed for divorce, let it lapse because we were living in different cities. He seemed to be settled enough that it wasn't an issue. But none of that was taken into account when I had to sit down in a locked room, essentially, with my abuser and a member of the court and go through mediation. I had to do that twice. I had to sit right next to him and listen to him lie about me. That was hard. And there was no, you know, at one point they said, you know, maybe we should do this in separate rooms and, you know, have the mediator bounce back and forth between the rooms. But what they meant was leave the person who they were talking to in the room and the other person, at this point it's me because I'm in tears, sitting in a public hallway on a bench, trying to pull myself together while I'm desperately trying to ensure that my abuser doesn't have the opportunity to continue to abuse me and doesn't have the opportunity to abuse my children.
What was the end result?
The end result was that the custody assessment team in La Crosse County found that he was perfectly safe. We were granted, we were told that we had to work back up to, we had to reunify because my daughter at that point had no contact with her father. It was her choice. She was pretty young at the time, but she was adamant. So we had to reunify, and eventually we ended it at 50-50 placement of both kids. And I lose track of time. It kind of all blurs together, but 6 months after everything was finally settled and she was had resumed overnight, so we got to 50-50, and then she stopped going again. And she later divulged that he was abusing her.
We're talking with Chris Hansen, a mother and survivor of domestic abuse in La Crosse, and Carmen Petrie is here, president and CEO of Sojourner Family Peace Center, discussing child custody when domestic violence is involved, and getting your experiences as well, 800-642-1234. Chris, I'm wondering, do you think women have to provide too much evidence of abuse in order to win sole custody? You know, based on your experience and what I'm hearing, I would imagine the answer is yes.
I don't know that there's any way to prove it. That's the problem, particularly because I didn't end up in a hospital. There is no documentation of abuse by an outside professional. There's no proof. It was clearly a he said, she said, and the consistent story that we have heard amongst the women in La Crosse County is that the court here particularly is very much in favor of 50-50 custody. And it felt very much that we all went into these situations where the determination was already made that it was going to be 50-50 custody before they even talked to us and heard our stories.
Carmen, so, oh yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt, Chris.
No, that's okay. So, I mean, really, it isn't coming in with a blank slate and hearing the evidence and making a determination. It's the determination is going to be 50-50, and you have to dissuade against that. That's an awfully hard bar when there's no physical evidence.
Carmen, that 50-50 bar and that joint custody, do you find that there is just such a yearning to have that dual custody that a lot of other things just get pushed aside?
Yes, I think the court does lean towards 50-50 being in the best interest. I remember the hearing many, many years ago when that piece of legislation was being considered. We were concerned exactly about the issues that Chris has raised. You know, most violence goes unreported. In her own words, there were no bruises, no physical violence. Our experience with survivors is that they, most of this happens in private. There aren't witnesses. There aren't documents. There's very little evidence to back up much of the violence that happens in women's lives. We also live in a culture that I think vilifies women. Mm. My experience, or we have stereotypes about women. You know, some of it came forward in the article where we want to believe that women come forward in custody cases and bring forward allegations of violence to get an upper hand in the case. And that's just not my experience. The false report rate is very low in our experience. She should have never been forced into mediation. When I said the court's not prepared, there should have been a screening process long before she was asked to sit down in a room with the person that she said was hurting her, that would have allowed for safety measures to be put into place. It's not an equal playing field when you're forced to be in a room with someone who's been hurting you. And as she said, we're not even physically prepared with the right kinds of location. She had to sit in the hallway. So those are the kinds of things when I say we're not prepared. The screening process needs to be anchored, robust, in place throughout the entire system. We have to think about, what are we putting survivors through? Would you want to sit in a hallway when you were afraid about what might be happening in your personal life, forced to sit there in a public hallway?
Let's pause here. We have Carmen Petrie, CEO of Sojourner Family Peace Center. Chris Hansen co-founded a support group called Mothers and Kids Surviving Abuse. Are you an attorney or a mental health professional who works in the custody process representing the best interest of the children? What can you say about these cases? What are your insights on joint custody? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're discussing how domestic violence affects child custody here in Wisconsin on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Should a parent who has a history of domestic abuse, should they be awarded joint custody? And under Wisconsin law, parents are considered to have equal rights to joint custody unless a judge decides otherwise, considering multiple factors like abuse, like domestic violence, other circumstances that would make a parent unsafe. Do you feel domestic violence survivors are being heard in concerns over joint custody? Do you think sole custody could help end a cycle of abuse? What is in the best interest of children in these situations? 800-642-1234. Carmen Petrie leads Sojourner Family Peace Center, and Chris Hansen is a mother and a survivor. Let's bring in Alex now in the Fox Cities. Hi, Alex. What would you like to say?
Hi. Well, the comment I'd like to make is one of the presenters talking was saying how the courts already decide, before you even get there, that they want to do 50-50 placement with a child. You know, the problem that I've seen through many decades is really it's the children that are not being put first. I mean, they're the ones that need to be taken into consideration and what's in the best interest of that child. If someone's really going to tell me the best interest of that child is to be at the mother's house 2 days a week and then the father's 3 days and then the mom's 3 days and then the father's 2 days, that's not correct. You need a stable environment for a child. And that's one of the things that's really missing from the court system, because they're looking at what's fair and equitable for the parents. It's like, no, what is fair and equitable for that child? You know, sometimes it's best for that child to be with the mom 100% of the time and getting to visit with the father on the weekends and stuff like that. Sometimes it's better the other way around, you know, and I understand that GALs are very overwhelmed. They have huge caseloads. There's organizations like CASA who actually are helping to make sure that children are put first and that they are the ones that are the priority when it comes to a custody arrangement, not the parents.
Yeah, Alex, sorry. Thank you. And I want Chris to respond first, and Alex bringing up GAL's guardian ad litem. Chris, what would you like to say there?
I think we have an implicit problem with GALs in the sense that at least in La Crosse County, and that's all I can speak to, is our GALs here are generally attorneys that have to sit before that same judge when they're representing their individual clients. I think it gets really hard to buck a system and say, no, I don't agree with this, when you have to sit before that same judge in other aspects of your life, you know, your professional life. So one of the attorneys that I had used during my divorce is the GAL for another woman that I know. And I think that's a conflict, you know. How do you buck a system and say, no, this isn't right, when you know you have to sit before the person who's going to decide everyone's fate in other cases?
Carmen, your thoughts, children not being put first, as Alex says.
I think Alex is right. You know, we don't live in a society that prioritizes children. Children don't have rights. And we're often trying to, you know, navigate the rights of the parents without any considerations for the child or the rights of the child. You know, we haven't prioritized that in our society. I think we're asking the wrong questions. For me, it's how do we keep the relation? Because children need to be connected to people that they love, and adults need to be healthy. How do we keep relationships intact and protect children and survivors first? That should be our primary driving concern. And when I said the court leans towards 50-50, you know, that's the presumption, that that's the place where they start. And you have to prove that there are issues that go against that presumption. And I think that Chris is right. There are complexities for GSLs. They are part of a system where they have to navigate cases where, you know, and I do think that influences them. That's a difficulty for GALs, that, you know, one minute you're a GAL and you're trying to come up with a recommendation, and you don't necessarily want to go against the judge that'll be deciding in another case that you're working on. I think we have to figure that out and create some equity so those situations aren't influencing the decisions and people feel free to act in the best interest of the child.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Carmen Petrie, CEO of Sojourner Family Peace Center in Milwaukee, providing services for families dealing with domestic violence. Chris Hansen, survivor of domestic abuse, mother of two, co-founded a support group in La Crosse called Moms and Kids Surviving Abuse. And hearing your thoughts as well, do you work in the family court system? Have you seen cases that involve domestic abuse? What is that like? 800-642-1234. Carmen, you touched briefly on this. How do you feel about the perception that a woman could be lying about abuse for the express purpose of alienating their child from the father? How does that perception affect survivors in these cases?
Well, for me, as a professional, it's an offensive assumption, you know, that someone would be, you know, a lot of women are told they're not credible by the system. They're lying. And I think we don't, as professionals, do enough of our own personal work to identify our own experiences and biases and opinions that might interfere with the way we're seeing circumstances. And I certainly believe that's true about domestic violence. You know, we have to work as professionals. We live in this culture that vilifies women and sees men very differently. And when I hear someone say, well, she's lying, I think that's offensive. What evidence do you have? What work have you done? How are you screening? How are you understanding that this human being is bringing this forward? It's contrary to everything we know to be true about domestic violence. As I said, most of it happens in private. Most of it goes unreported. And so to me, to say, well, she's lying. And I've heard that when we've tried to bring up screening processes. Years ago, I remember some people in the system saying, well, by asking, aren't you planting the seed? That's just not my experience. Human beings don't make up. Women don't make up these experiences.
Let's bring in Helen in Little Chute. Helen, what is your experience?
As a grandmother, mother, my experience is when my granddaughter was 9 months old, her dad beat my daughter. So bad in Milwaukee, they said it was the worst case of domestic abuse. This was in December that they'd ever experienced. They had all kinds of bloody pictures. What happened was 5 years later, they were sharing joint custody. My 5-year-old granddaughter at the time was pushed out of a window, fell 14 feet on concrete, had a broken leg, went to the hospital. We had all the x-rays. I presented that all to the court. My daughter presented to the court in Dodge County. They ignored it. They continued to give custody, joint custody to her dad. I just feel that the family courts in Wisconsin, in Dodge County in particular, they fail the children. The guardian ad litem, as a grandmother, I had contacted her many, many times. Please, please check the records, check the medical records. It seems like they can't even be bothered to read the evidence. It was extremely damaging to my family. And my granddaughter is now a teenager. And, you know, family courts in Wisconsin are failing the children, and something needs to be changed. Now, let me just finish. It's to the point where if the father has more money and the mother doesn't, if he can afford a rich attorney, then he can get custody. And basically, that's what happened.
Helen, we're going to get a response on the other side of this news break. Stay with us. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing custody when domestic abuse is involved in divorce proceedings. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. According to a recent investigation by ProPublica, Wisconsin is considered a leader in treating both parents as equal caregivers, and our state's percentage of cases with shared custody is among the highest in the nation. But the current law, designed to keep the survivor and child safe, legal experts say it's widely interpreted and does not specify that an abusive spouse cannot have any interaction with their child. Have you witnessed a parental custody battle? What could have been done differently? Are you a parent who has experienced abuse? What can you say? Join in 800-642-1234. Chris Hansen, a mother and survivor of domestic abuse here. Carmen Petrie, head of Sojourner Family Peace Center in Milwaukee. Chris, I want you to be able to respond first to Helen in Little Chute, who described a harrowing story of physical abuse documented and says the family court system is failing children and survivors.
First of all, I can't even imagine. I mean, I know my situation wasn't good, but it definitely wasn't as egregious as that. I think one of the things that Helen said really struck me and has been sort of a common theme is that fighting for custody in these, particularly in these contentious situations, is incredibly expensive. At least a couple of the other founding members of Mothers and Kids Surviving Abuse have spent upwards of up to $50,000 just on the custody portion of the divorce alone. And as a single parent, that's a lot. I mean, that's a lot of money. It is a lot of money for anyone. But remember, abusers only target people that they feel don't have the means to defend themselves. So you're talking about women who have been beaten down, whether that's physically or emotionally, and don't have resources available to them. They may or may not know how to navigate the legal system and how to, you know, most advantageously get to their goal of protecting their kids. And it's expensive. You know, coming up with the $5,000 to $10,000 for a retainer for a good attorney is a lot of money to come up with, much less having to pay the GAL, having to pay the court fees, having to pay the mandated reunification therapy that the courts in La Crosse mandate, and it isn't covered by health insurance. That is a cash only at $250 an hour.
And what
it's prohibitive.
What is mandated reunification? What can you explain what that is?
So in La Crosse County, they have historically, and they did it for me as well, they said, we want you to see this very specific therapist who their only goal is to take the child who doesn't want to see one of the parents and reestablish a relationship with that estranged parent.
Ah.
In my case, my daughter didn't want to see her father because he was mistreating her. And I was told we had to pay $250 an hour to this therapist to go against my daughter's wishes for in her own bodily autonomy. That's pretty awful. Hmm.
Carmen, what struck you in Helen's story?
Well, I think she's right. Representation matters in the court system. You know, I want to say I stand corrected that the court does not have a presumption of shared placement as a starting place. I have a colleague that just reached out. As I said, I'm not a court commissioner, a judge, or a lawyer. What I can tell you in my experience is with survivors, the court leans towards the assumption that, you know, they want to start there. And many of the survivors say exactly what Chris said. Representation matters. When you have an attorney, you do better in the system because they help you navigate. It is expensive. It can be very expensive. We've had survivors that have had to take loans, borrow money, go into debt. Many survivors say they just want to give up because it's too difficult and they'd rather, it's too emotionally difficult and they're too afraid. So they want to walk away from the process. And I've heard from many families that they have to go into debt to try to get the right representation. Not in all cases, but in some, and that is, I couldn't afford to come up with $10,000, $15,000. I'd have to take a loan personally. So, you know, it's difficult. Also what she said, sometimes evidence is not often considered criminal evidence. Courts don't always communicate. We have to do a better job of building bridges, I think, between all the courts. So information is shared easily and quickly in all cases. So judges have all the information they need. The other thing we need to talk about is I think sometimes there's an extreme lack of trust of the system, mm-hmm. and there can be cultural differences. So not only are you a survivor who's afraid to speak, but there may be differences, cultural differences, identity differences that prevent you from interacting or engaging with people in the system in a way that you can tell the truth about what's happening for you.
I want to ask you something else, Carmen, because mothers who report abuse, particularly child abuse, are losing child custody at rates much higher than men in these recent studies. And when mothers report abuse in custody cases, they lose custody of their children at about double the rate of fathers who report abuse. What is going on there?
Well, I'm grateful for research. Because research gives us evidence to what we know anecdotally is happening. Mm-hmm. I think that when women assert themselves, as I said, we live in a culture that demonizes women and sees women in a particular way. So we have stereotypes. I don't know exactly what's going on, but I know we live in a larger culture where misogyny is very much alive. So those are my initial thoughts.
I'm going to jump in here as we talk with Sojourner Family Peace Center's President Carmen Petrie, Chris Hansen, mother and survivor of domestic abuse in La Crosse, discussing child custody in Wisconsin when there is a history of abuse, and your stories as well at 800-642-1234. Shannon is in Nelson. Shannon, hi. Go ahead with your story.
Hi. I want to first lead with the fact that I lost custody of my daughter in a documented abuser situation while sitting in a room with him and his lawyers and his family when I was between court-appointed lawyers because I couldn't afford a lawyer and the fees in what I thought was a temporary situation. So leading with that, I want to say that all custodies, in my opinion, custody cases are passionate and expensive. So my first point is, why is there not something in place that helps the affordability or offers those fees to people in these women or men in these situations? And then the point I called to make was that I just think that joint custody is dependent on both parties behaving well and thinking in the best interest of the child. When there's a contempt of court issue, it takes a really long time and even more money to have that issue addressed. So I think that we need to improve both the cost, but also the speed of the process. And maybe it just comes down to supervision of those orders to ensure that parents are doing that. Because especially in an abuser situation, working with the other parent, any type of joint custody situation, you obviously can't work with them when they're abusing you. So someone does have the upper hand. So that's the point I called to make.
Shannon, thank you for that. Chris, a lot to unpack there. Cost, speed of the process, and being on the same page in the best interest of the children. Go ahead with your thoughts.
Well, and I think Shannon touched on something that has been bothering me quite a lot with the whole process. So I work in health insurance. It's a highly regulated industry. There is a tremendous amount of oversight. What strikes me most about the custody assessment process is that once the decision is made, there is no oversight to ensure that it was the best decision. There's no follow-up from the court, you know, at 30, 60, 90 days, 6 months, a year, to make sure that all parties are, one, complying with the order, and two, that it really is the best thing that for the kids. That just doesn't happen. And that just, I'm floored by the fact that they can basically tear our lives apart and there's no accountability for that.
No reassessing the situation. Carmen, what do you see there?
You know, I'm sitting here. I see this as a failure of society. Not just one particular part. You know, what we see happening in the family court system means we have some work to do to build some structure to help everybody who I believe there's a lot of passion, as someone said, on all sides. I think most human beings have good intentions. I think as a society, we have failed on this issue utterly. And then we come to our systems and we ask them to navigate these extremely complex situations when we as a society haven't made a decision about what we want to do about domestic violence and violence against children and how to keep people safe and how to promote healing. So long before it gets to the family court system, I think we've failed as a society. I want to say that because to me, it's not just a court issue. This is an everybody issue. And we need to figure out how to get there sooner. So these systems that don't always operate well aren't left, inadequately trying to figure out how to navigate or how to deal with these situations. It's not to say that things shouldn't change. They need to. And we need to partner to make that happen. But I wanted to say that about society.
Carmen Petrie with us, CEO of Sojourner Family Peace Center in Milwaukee. Chris Hansen co-founded a support group called Mothers and Kids Surviving Abuse. And you, let's talk. What's known as guardian ad litem, GAL, an attorney or mental health professional who participates in placement. What have your challenges been? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The organization End Abuse did a study in 2018 to learn whether domestic abuse had an impact on child custody placements in Wisconsin. And their study of family case law revealed, number one, joint custody is the most common order. And in the cases they looked at, domestic abuse findings are rarely made. Still time to talk about the custody process. 800-642-1234. Carmen Petrie is CEO of Sojourner Family Peace Center. Chris Hansen, a mother and survivor, with us for about 9 more minutes. Chris, I want to make some space to talk about your support group in La Crosse, Moms and Kids Surviving Abuse, and what you're trying to do with that. Can you share?
Sure. You know, I'm going to go and be really honest. We are very much an ad hoc group. It really started. We were connected through some professionals, and he said, hey, you know, this might be somebody who has you could benefit from talking from. We had reached out to some local or news organizations and submitted some press releases, trying to basically garner attention to the issues at hand. We all knew that our particular cases were unlikely to be impacted by any news that we, any attention that we drew to them.
Mm-hmm.
But really, the system needs to change. You know, what was the most striking about the situation was in reaching out to a variety of public officials, whether that was at the county level and some of our state legislators, every single person said that it is not their issue and they can't help fix the problems, which was really horrifying to hear my state legislators say, not my problem, I won't help you. And we have that in writing, and that was nauseating. Because it's the system's problem. It's not just one or two or 30 cases, as we've heard in La Crosse. It's a system's problem. I can't fix the system as an individual. That's on the legislature to change the rules under which they operate.
Carmen Sojourner, Family Peace Center, what resources can be provided by your organization in these custody proceedings?
Well, you know, we provide advocacy support very much the way Chris is describing. We have support groups. We do individual advocacy. We have a partnership with legal groups in town that we can help if representation is needed. I wanted to say I'm getting some feedback from colleagues through text that, you know, what's happening in La Crosse isn't necessarily happening in Milwaukee. And what I want to say is there's nuances and differences between every county. Absolutely. My fear is we're going to miss the opportunity for us to make change happen. Mm-hmm. What we see at Sojourner is sometimes systems don't work the way we intend them to. It's not that there's bad people intentionally making decisions that are hurtful or harmful. I think we need to keep ourselves open to what we know to be true about this issue. We're not as educated as we need to be, all of us, about this issue. It's complicated. Most of it happens in private. Not a lot of it is physical. There isn't always evidence, and our systems don't always work. They don't communicate between courts, and all of these breakdowns can lead to bad outcomes for people. And we need to look for opportunities to change that, whether it happens in one case, 10 cases, or 100. Human beings deserve us to show up and try to fix what's not working on behalf of children and survivors. And so I wanted to say, you know, Milwaukee County is very different. I think this is a human rights issue, that human beings deserve protection, safety, and security. And certainly children do. And nobody should be forced to be in a situation where they have to navigate a power dynamic without representation or in a system that doesn't understand the complexity of what they're dealing with. We have to fix that. So we provide advocacy and we help people navigate their choices. We believe in autonomy and self-determination. So if a survivor says, I don't want to bring this forward in the court, we support her or him in not bringing it forward. We educate them about the process and get them representation in cases if we can and when we can.
Carmen Petrie, President and CEO of Sojourner Family Peace Center in Milwaukee. Chris Hansen in La Crosse, survivor of domestic abuse and with a support group, founding a support group. Let's go to Jesse in Appleton. Jesse, your thoughts and experiences.
Good morning. Thank you for your time on this show. I really appreciate it.
Yes.
We've only had one divorce in the family, just really quick, and it's my baby brother. And he is an absolutely outstanding father. He wanted a dozen kids. I mean, he's just one of those rare, unbelievable dads. Anyway, I mean, he still, to this day, till there were adults, baked with them. I mean, he just really good father. Anyway, I wanted to say I was his rock through the process, because we'd never experienced divorce, and there were two children in the middle of the whole thing, and it was horrible. But I was very appalled at, I wanted to know what kind of oversight is on these guardian ad litem, because the place we went, no names mentioned, but they were, this particular guy was more interested in the fees, when the fee schedule was, than the children. And also I caught him and turned him into the judge, and this is true fact, that he wanted to just get this over so he could make his tea time. Disgusted me, and I had no way of, you know, my parents put a second mortgage on their house just to let my brother get his divorce. And thank God we had a wonderful judge, you know, that listened to the children. It was a 3-day, 3.5-day actually, divorce. And he actually pulled the children out of school, the judge did, and met with the children for like an hour. Mm. It was a very difficult, we never talked bad of the mother, but she was very incredibly abusive toward my brother and the kids. And it had just been enough mentally, you know. But I just wanted to say out there too, these people that are coming from different countries are immigrants. I welcome them with open arms. This is the United States, but I truly believe that there is not enough. They're not being educated, the males and the females.
Jesse, we're out of time. And Chris, I want to give you the last word here. Go ahead. Chris, are you there? I think we're having some
time. I'm here. I'm sorry.
It's that mute button.
Yes, exactly. No, I just want to echo a lot of what Carmen has said, in that we need better systems in place for the people involved with custody assessments and custody processes in general, to better understand the generational impacts of abuse on children and on survivors. You know, it is challenging. It's financially and emotionally draining, and it puts our children at risk, because the people who are supposed to protect them aren't. I mean, frankly, the truth of the matter is they are not protecting the children adequately when the evidence that is presented to them contradicts their innate belief that custody should be 50-50. I really just want better systems in place. It is too late to protect my child from what happened to her, but I want to make sure that we don't allow it to happen to more children.
Chris, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, I'm grateful to be here. Thank you.
Carmen, thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome.
Chris Hansen, mother and survivor of domestic abuse in La Crosse, co-founded the group Mothers and Kids Surviving Violence. Carmen Petrie, president and CEO of Sojourner Family Peace Center in Milwaukee, been an advocate for survivors of domestic violence for decades. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.